I want to start with a few questions. Firstly, we have been saying all week in the Al Anisim, La'amcha Yisrael Asisa Teshua Gedola Ufurkan Kahayom Hazeh. God brought a great salvation and redemption to the Jewish people till today. That means whenever you say that prayer, that applies. Till today. What's left of Hanukkah till today? What did Hanukkah accomplish? We rededicated, refurbished the Beis HaMikdash, relit the menorah, rebuilt the Mizbeach, and so on. Do we have a Beis HaMikdash today? No. So that was gone when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The Rambam adds another dimension of what Hanukkah achieved. It returned Jewish royalty for over 200 years till the destruction of the Second Temple. Do we have Malchus Yisrael today? Is there Jewish royalty? No. Right. Even Jewish state, but it's not Jewish royalty. We don't have any kings. We don't have, we are still Meshubid. We are still subjugated to the nations of the world very, very, very intensely. If you don't read the papers, then you won't know what I'm talking about, but if you do, you'll have a sense that we are not an independent country at all. We are very much meshubed to the nations of the world, except for Lieberman. But otherwise, the rest of us are meshubed to the nations of the world. So what's left? Both of the things that were achieved by Hanukkah are gone. So how can we say that God created a salvation and a redemption till today? Second question. It's a famous Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Bahalosha. After the 12 tribes, the 12 Nesiim, brought their sacrifices in consecrating the Mizbeach in the desert, in the Mishkan. So, and that's what we read on Hanukkah, those 12 consecration of the Mizbeach. So Aaron HaKohen felt bad because his tribe, the tribe of Levi, didn't have a share in that. So God comforted him and he said, don't worry, what you have is greater than what they have. They consecrated the altar upon which we bring sacrifices, but you and your tribe are going to light the menorah. And even though the sacrifices will be bottled, the sacrifices will be abrogated when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, but your menorah will continue on even after the destruction. That's the Medrash. The Ramban says, what's he talking about? When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the menorah also was stopped. He says, here is a hint to the menorah of Hanukkah, the menorah of Beis HaShmonoi, that continues on throughout the generations, and we light the Hanukkah menorah, right, even in Galus, even after the destruction of the temple. Very difficult Ramban. We don't light the menorah. We do something that is a remembrance of the menorah. So if that's the case, we have a lot of remembrance of sacrifices too. We read the parshios of the sacrifices. We bring various things during the year to remember Korban Pesach and to remember the sacrifices brought with it and so on. So if we're talking about remembrances, the remembrances to the sacrifices too. If we're talking about the actual lighting of the menorah, that doesn't exist either after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, just like the sacrifices don't exist. So what is the comfort that God gave to Aaron? What you have is greater than them. They consecrated the altar and sacrifices, which will be abrogated when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and your menorah will continue on. What do you mean it continues on? One last question, and then we'll get to some answers. If they wanted to make a remembrance of the miracle of the lighting of the menorah, okay, where was the menorah lit? In the temple. Okay. What today takes the place of the temple? What is the surrogate temple today? Where is that? Shul. Beis HaKnesses is called the Mikdash Ma'at. Okay. That which we light the menorah every day in the shul is only a custom. Only a customs, not a halacha. It was not part of the original institution of Hanukkah. It's a custom. In fact, very big question how you make a bracha on it since it's only a custom. But we do make a bracha. But nobody fulfills the mitzvah of lighting the menorah by lighting in shul. No one, even the personal lights. It's only fulfills a custom, that's it. But the halacha of lighting the menorah has to be in the home. Ner ish ubeisa. Where did they institute the lighting of the menorah? In the home. Why? If we want to make something as a remembrance of the miracle of the menorah, they should have made it in shul. And that is a remembrance of the menorah that burnt in the Beis HaMikdash. Why did they make the halacha of menorah in the home and not in the shul?
Well, at least everybody in the home have a home. Not everybody goes to shul.
Yes and no, but the Gemara also speaks about people don't have homes. Okay. Since it is late, and since I am paid to give the shiur, I'm going to give the answers. Okay. If after I finish, there is time, and you don't like my answer, and you have a better one, I will call it. Okay. We've explained in the past, and I'm not going to dwell on it a lot, just enough to put the information that we need to use to answer these questions, that the influence of Yavan, Greece, and its dangerous negative effect on the Jewish people is based on the fact that Yavan, Greek culture, represented a totally external view of the world. They didn't believe in anything spiritual. Even their gods were basically supermen and superwomen. They denied that there was anything spiritual about this world. They saw they glorified external physical might, beauty, strength, and so on. That was what the Greece represented. And we always explain that the name Yavan hints to that. Yavan is three letters, Yud, Vav, and Nun. They're all lines. They have no inside. They're just external lines. And not only that, when you look at the world in a physical, material perspective, you judge it by quantity. How much? When you look at the world from a spiritual perspective, you judge it by quality. Quantity comes in three generic sizes: small, medium, and large. That's Yavan. Small yud, medium-sized vav, large nun. That is Yavan. Three external lines in the three generic sizes of quantity, and in addition, those three lines are parallel. They never meet. Unless you inject a spiritual perspective to the world, there's no achdus, there's no unity. Everything stands by itself. And not only that, the word Yavan backwards is noi, beauty. There is an idea of beauty. But real beauty is not just skin-deep beauty. Real beauty is a reflection of the inner beauty that exists in this world. But since the Greeks denied any inner beauty, and they only glorified the external beauty, might, power, body, they turned beauty inside out, upside down, and totally distorted it. And that's why the Golus of Yavan, first of all, didn't plan to mention this, I'm going to say it anyway, we call this Golus Yavan, the exile of Yavan. Where's an exile? We had a Beis HaMikdash, we were in Eretz Yisrael. Where's Golus Yavan? The answer is, Golus can come in two varieties. It can come in the physical variety, where you are distanced from the land physically, and you don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And it can come in a spiritual variety, where you are on the land and have a Beis HaMikdash and are millions of miles away from the inner values of those things. You only have a connection to the externals. And that's what the influence of Yavan of Greece had on the Jewish people. It made us also look at Yiddishkeit in a very external way. We were in Eretz Yisrael, but we were separated from the neshama of what Eretz Yisrael was. We were in the temple, but separated from what the neshama of the temple was. And that's also Golus. That's also called exile. In any case, Golus Yavan is hinted to in the Pasuk in the beginning of Bereishis, the Choshech al Penei Sahom, Ze Golus Yavan, there is darkness on the face of the deep. This refers to the exile of Yavan that made the Jewish people blackened and darkened their eyes with darkness. Why? Because in the dark, you can't make distinctions. You can only see and distinguish the externals. You can't see, so you can touch. And you can only touch the externals. And therefore, Choshech, when there's light, you can see and make distinctions and understand the form of things. When there's darkness, you can only detect the material of the thing, the external of the thing. That's Choshech. In the end of last week's Sedra, Shabbos Hanukkah, it speaks about when they searched through the sacks looking for the goblet that Yosef had planted there, and they searched through all the sacks. So the Gemara in Pesachim says that we learn searching from searching. Here it says they searched, and it says that in the future God is going to search Yerushalayim. And it says, how is he searching Yerushalayim? With neros, with candles. And from there we learn that you make bedikas chametz. When you search for the chametz, you do it with a candle. Because when you search for things and you look for what's inside, the cracks and crevices, not just what's on the outside. You want to uncover what is hidden inside. Like when you look for chametz, you do it with light. Light uncovers the inside of things. And darkness presents only the externals. And therefore, the gullus of Greece is represented by an external view of the world is represented by darkness. There was a greater light. That's regular light. Regular light gives you the ability to look inside of things also and to search them out. But there was a light that was created in the beginning of the world, the Or HaGonus, the light that was hidden away. That light, you could see the inner spiritual purpose of everything. That light was like an X-ray. You could see within things. With that kind of light, it was a spiritual light, and that light existed for 36 hours, 12 hours for Adam Harishon, 12 hours that he was created on Erev Shabbos and lived 12 hours Erev Shabbos, and the light remained through that first Shabbos for 24 hours, is a total of 36 hours, and then it was hidden away, and in its place, God showed Adam Harishon how to make fire. Physical light, material light. It's interesting that the sum total of all the candles of Hanukkah is 36, not counting the Shamas. When you get a box of Hanukkah candles, it says 44 candles. But that's because you have 8 extra because of the Shamas. But if you take away the Shamas, you have 36 candles. Those 36 candles represent the 36 hours that supernal spiritual light existed in this world for Adam Harishon. That light was the light where you could really uncover the purpose of everything, its inner spiritual value. Now, in a world where there is only darkness, meaning you can't discern the inner values, all you can see, all you can sense is the externals, by touch, the externals of things, in that physical, material, dark world, the Jewish people are not special. Because from a physical, material standpoint, not only aren't we anything special, but we're inferior. We don't have quantity, which is what makes the physical, material world great. A lot. Strong. Big. We are not the most numerous. The Chinese have us outnumbered quite a few times, and we are not the strongest nation, right? We don't have the external trappings. We don't have a big land, right? We have a little land that, you know, you have to put the names of the cities, even the country, off the map somewhere out in the Mediterranean because it doesn't fit on our country. We have a little land, and we have a little amount of people, and we're not the strongest people in the world, and therefore we're nothing special if you look from a perspective of darkness, of externals, material world. On the other hand, if you look at the internal spiritual value of the Jewish people, we have a special relationship with God, and that makes us very special. So the Greeks also denied the specialness of the Jewish people. There's nothing special about us. And because of that, they wanted to take away all the things that made the Jewish people special, like Shabbos and Bris Milah and Rosh Chodesh. All those things are unique. We'll speak about it in a little while. To the Jewish people, they wanted to take that away. The menorah is the symbol of that inner light that the Jewish people have, which is our relationship to God. The menorah, the Gemara says, is the symbol that God's presence rests amongst the Jewish people. It says God doesn't need our light. He had a pillar of fire and enlightened us the entire 40 years in the desert. So he needs a menorah that we have to light him up. But the menorah is a symbol that God's inner light resides amongst the Jewish people, and that is what we celebrate by lighting that menorah, and that is what the Greeks wanted to do by defiling that menorah. The Greeks didn't want to destroy us. They didn't even destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They wanted to do two things, l'tamei u'lechalel, to defile and to desecrate. Start with the word to desecrate. I don't know exactly what in Greek the word desecrate means, but in Hebrew, the word halal means empty space, means a vacuum, something that has a shell and no inside. That's why a flute is called a chalil, because it's hollow. It's a hollow instrument. That's why a dead body is called a halal, because he has a body but no soul. And that's why I think the etymology of the word hollow comes from the word halal, especially if you're Russian. Right? Hollow. Hollow is H-O-L-L-O-W, which is the double L is the halal, is the same exact word. I think the hollow comes from the word halal. They wanted to hollow us out. They wanted to take away any inner spiritual meaning and leave the outer shell. And that's what Tuma is. Tuma is wherever there was Kedusha, and the Kedusha left, the vacuum that's left is Tameh, or it is filled with Tuma, one of the two. But Tuma comes where there's a vacuum, where there's only an outer shell. Now, every single thing, therefore, in this world has its physical, material existence, but it also has a neshama, everything. Every inanimate object has a spiritual counterpart, a spiritual aspect to it. Every animal, a human being, has a neshama high on a higher level. A Jewish neshama is even on a higher level. But nothing in this world is merely material, is only external. There's an internal spiritual connection, a spiritual aspect to every physical thing. And that applies also to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was an external building with physical measurements and parameters, but there was an inner spiritual neshama to the Beis HaMikdash, which was God's presence. Now, the spiritual neshama of the Beis HaMikdash was not inside the Beis HaMikdash. It was somewhere else. Says the Osuli Mikdash Vishochanti Bisochom. The Chazal say, it doesn't say Vishochanti Bisocho within the Beis HaMikdash, but Vishochanti Bisochom amongst them. Rabbis learn from that God's presence is not in the building, God's presence is in the heart of every Jew. That's the spiritual aspect of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not within the walls of the temple. It's within the heart of every Jew. Every Jew is the spiritual temple. The physical temple brings God's presence into the heart of every Jew, but it's more specific than that. It's not just in the heart of every Jew. The Gemara says that Hillel, on Sukkot, at Simchas Beis HaShoeva, would say the following: Im ani kan, hakol kan. If I'm here, then everything's here. And if I'm not here, then nothing is here. And if you'll come to my house, I'll come to your house. Says Rashi, Hillel was speaking in the name of God. And he was saying in God's name, if I'm here, then everything's here. This is a building. If my presence devolves on this building, then that's what the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is. If my presence isn't here, then nothing's here. Then it's an empty shell. And if you come to my house, I will come to your house. Meaning, where is the spiritual aspect of the Beis HaMikdash? Where does it devolve? In the Jewish home. It's in the heart of every Jew, but more specifically, in the Jewish home. That is the spiritual inner aspect of the Beis HaMikdash. The physical aspect is the building of the temple. The real inner spiritual temple is every Jewish heart, but more specifically, the Jewish home. Now, there is a corollary, a parallel between the holiday of Sukkot and the holiday of Hanukkah. In fact, the Sfas-Emes says that every Torah holiday, there are three Torah holidays. There's Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Sholosh Regalim. We have a rabbinic holiday corresponding to two of them. And when Mashiach comes, there'll be a rabbinic holiday corresponding to the third. We have a rabbinic holiday corresponding to Shavuos. When we received the Torah, there was a time when we re-received the Torah, Purim. Purim is one day, Shavuos is one day. So Purim and Shavuos correspond. Purim is the Yontif the Rabbanan, the rabbinic Yontif that corresponds to the Torah Yontif of Shavuos. It's a Yontif of Golus. Shavuos was given before we came into Eretz Yisrael, but we were redeemed, and in exile we had Purim, corresponding to Shavuos. Sukkot is the Torah holiday that represents the honor of the Jewish people, Anoni Akavel, and the fact that this physical world is not the main thing. That's what the Sukkah represents, two things. This physical world is not the main thing. It's only an Olam Haroi. It's only a temporary dwelling. The real thing is a spiritual world that represents the world to come. And in that respect, if we understand that the material, physical world is not the main thing, the inner spiritual values are the main thing, then that's the covet, that's the honor of the Jewish people, because then we're special. We're not special externally, physically. We're external when you look at the internal spiritual values of this world. So Sukkot represents those two aspects which go together, and Sukkot is 8 days. Similarly, in Golus, the rabbis instituted another holiday, 8 days, just like Sukkot, and represents the same thing. Don't get carried away with the physical, material world. It's only temporary. The Iker is the spiritual, and that is the greatness of the Jewish people. That's why the miracle was expressed through the menorah, which represents the fact that God's presence rests amongst the Jewish people. And that is basically what's special about us is the Torah. Sukkot represents the written Torah, and that's why we finish the written Torah on Sukkot, on Simchas Torah. And Hanukkah represents the menorah, which represents the oral Torah. The light of the oral Torah, which is the neshama, Mishnah, is the same letters as neshama, which is the inner quality of the Torah itself. And that's why we said Ner Hanukkah is 36 candles, representing the 36 hours that inner light was in the world, and that inner light was hidden in the Torah. That is what Hanukkah represents. And therefore, when we light the menorah in our homes, we are continuing the inner light of the menorah, which never was abrogated. We're not doing a remembrance of what they lit in the temple. We're doing exactly what the menorah in the temple achieved. It created an inner light that devolved on the Jewish home. And therefore, they made the lighting of menorah in the Jewish home because Hanukkah represents the inner values, not the external things. The external menorah is gone. But the inner effect of that external menorah, where the light of the menorah comes from the Jewish home, that continues on. sacrifices, we lost the sacrifices. We lost their inner value and their external value. We have remembrances to them. But this is not a remembrance. This is a continuation of the inner value of the menorah. That's what the Rebbeim Shem told Aaron HaKohen. Yours is greater than theirs. When the temple's destroyed, there's only remembrances to sacrifices. But there's a continuation of the inner light of the menorah, even after the temple's destroyed, through the menorah of Hanukkah. And that's why the menorah, the mitzvah, is in the home, not in the shul. In the shul, it's just a remembrance of what happened externally. But in the home, it's a continuation, actually, of what happens constantly when that light of the menorah continues. And that is what exists even till today. Ad Hayom Hazeh, that power, that inner light of the menorah continues on till today. We have the power to go against and to overpower the influence, the external materialistic influences of Greece, and they still exist. Greece acquiesced to the Roman Empire, and all of Western society basically is a continuation of the Holy Roman Empire, Christianity. And it all is based on external things, external might and external beauty and how much you have or whatever. And Hanukkah represents the opposite. Now, to take it one step further, a few minutes, so we might as well use them up. Okay. We say, what is the specialness? So Hanukkah represents the specialness of the Jewish people. Because when you look at the inner aspect, you see that specialness. What is the specialness? We say it every Yom Tov. Ato v'chartonu mikolo amin, ohavta osanu, v'rotzisa banu, v'romantonu mikolo lashonos, v'kidashtonu b'mitzvosecho, v'keiratonu malkeinu l'avodosecho. The way I explain it always is the following. The Rebbeinu Shem chose us from all the nations of the world. How? By exalting us over all the languages. He gave us a potential, a spiritual potential, a neshama that is on a higher plane than any other human being. And that's Chesed Hashem, that is something, a kindness of God. We don't know why. He chose our forefathers, they excelled, and he therefore gave their descendants, starting with Avraham Avinu, a special neshama, which is expressed through the language that we speak, which is Lashon HaKodesh. The neshama is expressed through language. We have a neshama kedosha, we have Lashon HaKodesh. We have a holy language. And that is the potential difference. And that's what it says that Avraham Avinu called the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash shows that we're special. He called it a mountain. A mountain is where you are elevated, closer to God. And that's what God did. He picked us up from the other nations of the world, gave us a holy neshama, and in that way distinguished us from the nations of the world. It doesn't give us rights. It gives us tremendous responsibility. Our being chosen is not that we have rights over the other peoples of the world. We have responsibility to them because we have this potential. And that aspect of the Beis HaMikdash is that three times a year we ascend that mountain to see God and be seen by God. Aliyah L'Regel, that's one aspect of the Beis HaMikdash, the mountain aspect. Different times in history, we can see that the Jewish people are special. That's Avraham Avinu's representation. Chesed, it's a total kindness. We don't know what God did it. There's no logical reason why we're any different than anybody else. That was God's choice. It's his business. Then comes Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak Avinu calls the temple Sodeh, a field. We have the ability to take that potential and to actualize it, to bring it out, to show that we're holy, do things that are holy, live a holy life. That's v'kidashtanu b'mitzvosecha. You sanctified us with the mitzvahs. And that's ohavta osanu. You loved us. And that's the aspect of the Beis HaMikdash of the sacrifices, of bringing out that holiness in a external way, showing that we're holy by doing holy things and living a holy life, and making ourselves in every aspect of our life closer to God. That's the second aspect of this specialness of the Jewish people. It starts with the potential and then the actualization of that potential. And finally, the Ratzisa Bono, which means not that God desired us, but he desires through us. God not only chose us and gave us that inner spiritual potential, he not only gave us the ability to actualize it, but he put the running of the world in our hands. We create God's will. We say it all the time. Yehi ratzon lefanecha. And that is through the Torah that we have. God gave us the ability to be partners with him in creation and to bring the world to its completion by creating the world to come. So that is the Kerav Tongam al Kenu Lavodasecha. He brought us close to his service. We are like servants who serve God and become like his partners in creation. And that's called the Beis Hashem, the home. The Beis HaMikdash is God's home, where you can see that we are the B'nai Bayis, we're the family, who are partners with God. And that's why the Yevanim wanted to negate all of this. Rosh Chodesh, time. We said there are times when you can see the potential of the Jewish people throughout history. Rosh Chodesh brings about the three Yomim Tovim. When we sanctify the new moon, then on the 15th day is Pesach, and on the 6th day is Shavuos, and on the 15th day is Sukkot. They wanted to take away that potential, the spiritual potential, and negate it, so they prohibited Rosh Chodesh. Shabbos, Bris Mila represents that we can bring that inner holiness externally. Bris Mila represents that it's a sign in our bodies that holiness can come out and be actualized actually physically. That's Bris Mila. And finally, the Shabbos, which represents the idea that we are partners with God in creating the world to come. And that's what they wanted to take away. All three aspects of the specialness of the Jewish people. The innate potential, the actualization, and the fact that then we become partners with God in bringing the world to its goal. And that's why it says in the Alanisim that God did three things. Ravto es vivenu, he fought our battle. Danto es dinenu, he judged our judgment. Nakanta es nikmasenu, and he also took our revenge. When the Greeks wanted to negate the inner potential spiritual value of the Jewish people by obliterating Rosh Chodesh, so God fought our battle and showed that even though we were weak and we were few, but we had something special about us because we were pure and we were righteous, we were pure, righteous, and so on. And it doesn't make a difference externally what you are. It's the internal value. And then he showed that we have the ability to bring that out and we become tzaddikim and tahorim. We can make ourselves pure and righteous by bringing out that potential. So he judged our judgment. Who is guilty? Who's the innocent? Who's the pure? Who's the impure? And then they wanted to take away the control of the world, the influence of the world. They wanted to be the ones in charge. So God said, you're going to take revenge on them and take it back from them. And that's through Oskei Sorasecha, for the people who occupy themselves with Torah, are the ones who are God's partner in bringing this world about. And that is the three aspects of the temple. It says, after that, they went in, Ufinu Eseicholecha, they cleaned out, they bow Bonecha, the Dir Beisecha, your children, the ones who live in that house, that's God's home, where we're the ones who help to bring about the effects in this world. Bo Bonecha le Dvir Beisecha, that's the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's where the Torah comes from. And they cleaned out the Heichal, that was the aspect of bringing those ideas out, actually actualizing them and realizing them. And then they, what's it called, Tiharu Es Mikdashecha, they matire the Mikdash, so we can in fact show that inner potential that we have. And all of this was contained in the Hidliku Neiros V'Chatzros Kodshecha. And the lighting of the candles showed that inner Kedusha still continued on, even amongst the darkness, even in Golas, we're still special. And that specialness, which is represented by the light of the menorah, and where is it represented? In the Jewish home, that's where it continues every Hanukkah, and that is the the Kayom Hazeh that exists even till today. So that is the one aspect, at least, of Chanukah. I'll give you something at least to think about. And the Mirza Hashem, next week we will start the next Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. Yeah, it could be the wife in the temple, in the shul, in the home. The when we're on the right level, like in Eretz Yisrael, we can light the menorah outside. When you're in real galus, you have to light it on the inside.